All right, Matthew, welcome back to episode 118 of the Performance Advantage podcast, where we bring sports science to the people once Matt's internet gets sorted. This week on the show, we're breaking down some of the science and myths and misinterpretations of the science around too much data. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I'm Mr. Hashtag Fast with Data, sports scientist, runner, coach, coach educator, along with Matt, aka Mr. MTB PhD, aka Breakace, creator and founder of the world's first brake software sensor combo out on the trail. So he would be also a Mr. Hashtag Fast with Data. So Matt, people often associate me with data. Like, oh yeah, like on the triathlon I did in the weekend, I was wearing 2 stride power meters as well as wearing my watch, which most people don't do in a draft legal sprint distance triathlon. And you were sassing on the LinkedIn community for saying that you saw this post going around about too much data is a bad thing. And everyone shits on you because you're trying to make mountain biking not fun anymore.
My life goal, dude, is to democratize data for mountain bikers, like make it easy for mountain bikers to access and utilize good data. Not data, because I think data is like, if someone's not numbers orientated, they might think, you know, oh, data, that's a little bit scary, you know, but you can use data to create feedback. That's what we do with Breakace, right? We gather all this information 1,000 times per second and then spit out the 3 places that you can improve the most on the trail, on any trail that you do. It's all about making it easy, right? Not everyone's a numbers person, but I want that to happen with every kind of data. Like, there's so many types of sensors available to us as athletes now, and we can use all of it, I think. And I want people to see that.
Okay, so this show, I guess, best thing to do would be to break down what we have available to us, what people are kind of using now, what is, like, what you should be using, for sure, hands down, like, fundamentals, basics, then kind of, like, the bullshit, as well as the, like, deep dive stuff.
Yeah, let's also loop in the science that we found. Now, there's a lot of articles floating around the internet saying that there's data overload, especially in cycling. I think, honestly, I don't think runners have like all caught on to the fact that they can collect any data besides just GPS from their watch. So I don't think it's as much of a thing for runners. Triathletes, you know, they love their data.
Triathlon, you don't even need to like realize anyone else is competing. Like, you just,
yeah,
you just look at your numbers.
You just need to know yourself.
Yeah. End of the race. You're just like, okay, well, I don't care what anything,
there's a problem. And we'll get into
short distance triathlons, a bit different.
Well, first off, I know you don't have a power meter on your bike. So, you know, I'm going to take it easy on you for that this time. But also I think cyclists, this article, I think, has given data in cycling potentially a bad name, so we'll dig into that. And we found some flaws in the study. Like, we don't want to tear it apart too much, like reviewer 2, which is honestly a bit painful if the authors end up listening to this. But we'll dig into that and say...
reviewed this?
I think it's one of those, like, pay-to-play journals.
Yeah, but still, you saw, like, just a general mistake in the standard deviation.
Well, I hope it was a mistake because it was a ridiculous standard deviation. And that was like after 5 minutes of looking at it. But let me ask you, what data do you use every day?
On the regular?
Yeah. When you're like working out, exercising, running, riding, what are your go-tos?
I have the triangle, which is heart rate.
Okay, yeah.
No, this is my triangle. Leave me alone.
Okay, yeah. you can have it, dude.
It's kind of the way it's displayed on the watch. But I have heart rate in the top, So if you like, if everyone in there in their mind is picturing your watch screen for, because it's different, like on a cycle computer, you've got so much area to play with. You pretty much have iPads on your handlebars. And so obviously you're pretty restricted on a GPS watch. The top, I have heart rate, and then underneath that, left and right, pace and power. And that's kind of my trifecta. That's my triangle.
Trifecta sounds way cooler than the
triangle. I know. I just came up with it the other day when I was explaining it to someone who was doing a race. I was like, you want to, like, and now, you know, because people, like, it sells, you know, sex sells. So, like, systems sell. So when you got, like, the trifecta system, I was like, man, that's a good YouTube thumbnail. I'm going to work on that.
Thumbnail first, video second.
Yeah, package it first. Well, I have the video on this whole topic.
Oh, really?
But it's like, I've really struggled. It just hasn't done well. Because I like called it my hierarchy system. Then I said how to run a faster marathon. But it's because people aren't really in the running sphere, like aren't clued up on running power. So as soon as you mention it, people are like, it doesn't work. It's not measured like cycling and all that shit. So anyway, on the regular like that. And then obviously duration and distance, because it just kind of goes without saying. You need to know how long or far you went, depends on the intervals you're using.
Yeah, but you also use the core body temperature sensor almost all the time, right?
Not like I'm going to start using it now. We're getting into the hotter conditions. Mm-hmm. And I used it just on a couple of trainer sessions I did before the triathlon.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, like I'm not using it on the regular. Nah.
Okay. The data, the sensors that I use, I'll rattle those off quickly. I have tire pressure sensors, which are sick.
Oh, we don't have a sensor comp. Then yeah, I can keep going.
Oh yeah, dude. I want to hear it all. Like, yeah, I want to hear it all.
Well, I've got the Strides, and I just got the new Stride, another new version of the Stride, because
yeah, bro,
they
released
Stride Duo.
Dude, I'm getting ads everywhere on the socials for Stride Duo.
Yeah, footpath tracking, left-right balance, more accurate data from, so you're getting ground contact time, vertical oscillation, stride length, like stride height, same as vertical oscillation, really. Now you're getting your footpath tracking. So we'll get into whether that's useful or not. But, and yeah, then I've got another sensor from Coros, who tried to do the same thing. It's like, you can clip it onto your shorts to get more accurate, like left right balance at the hips, or you can have it on your shoe, which pretty much just provides better accuracy on the trails or in low GPS conditions. And then I've got a glucose monitor, not continuous glucose, just a standard finger prick glucose, finger prick ketone, finger prick lactate meter. I've got the core body temp sensor. And then I've got the heart rate strap, as well as recently been using heart rate band.
Sick.
And I think that's it.
Sick. That's cool. Okay, man, I think you got me beat. So I got tire pressure sensors, which are sick.
Yeah.
On my bike. Obviously, power meter, every bike. I also have, obviously, brake ace, every bike, so brake sensors as well. Obviously, I have the Garmin, I use the Wahoo, so I got that to record it all. And I have a speed sensor on there just because I was testing to see whether that was more accurate than GPS speed. Man, I guess that's...
You don't have your suspension sensors anymore, right?
No, I don't have them on anymore. But yeah, I had the Shockwiz, and I've tested the motion instruments system as well. And man, great experience on that. So I can talk about that later. Like, totally helped me set up my bike. Wouldn't have been possible without data. No way. And yeah, that's about it. I remember looking at my bike and thinking, wow, there's actually a lot of batteries on there. One at each tire, one at each brake, one at the power meter. The Wahoo obviously has a battery, and then the speed sensor has a battery. That's a few. Like, that is a fire hazard. Absolutely. With all that.
Yeah, don't even need to declare it when you put it on the plane.
No,
you
like, just,
if you knew how many batteries are on this thing, you'd...
Well, you know, you, it actually, I looked a lot into this with flying with batteries, and it's actually all good, especially if they're in airplane mode. It's the loose batteries that are a big problem.
Yeah.
And obviously power banks are massive, so you got to be careful. But yeah, I love looking at all that data, and I love looking at all that data for my athletes too. Like, some of it has greater utility for sure. But yeah, love it.
Okay. So what's most useful day to day?
This is a hard question. And the reason I think it's a hard question is because not every type of data is useful that day. But the more you have, and the longer you build up that store of data, the more useful it becomes. So if you have, let's say with one of the elite World Cup racers I train, we've been working together for like 6 or 7 years. Like, that's a long time. And we have training peaks data from the beginning, from the very beginning, with a power meter. Like, that is so handy to look back on. And now we've started integrating things like the Whoop, which tracks an insane amount of data, which I'm only kind of just digging into and trying to figure out how we can utilize that alongside the other stuff. So let's say, for example, you get a Whoop and you're like, oh, sweet, I slept for 7 hours last night, because it kind of reduces the amount you think you slept, and I slept for 1.3 hours in deep sleep. That data is 100% not useful on its own. But if you collect that for a week, 10 days, 100 days, 100 years, you have so much information to go off of. So
yeah,
I don't know
about that one.
Okay, what do you think? Tell me.
Well, yeah. I tracked my sleep for a while, and in the end it just came down to like volume of sleep, right? Like, I don't know the accuracy, and I don't even know how you'd measure it accurately to know like, oh, I was in deep sleep, I was awake. It's like, I was asleep. You're going to tell me I was awake for an hour and a half? Like, where was I? What was I doing? Like, I wasn't.
That's a great point, but I would say you don't know enough about sleep.
No, I don't. I have read Why We Sleep by Matt Walker. Great book. Highly recommend that book. Really interesting. But I know, right, for me, got to get close to 8 hours. 7 hours is like minimum. 7.5 is standard. Getting up to 8 and I'm feeling good. Getting over 8, it just doesn't happen for me. Like, playing around with going to bed earlier, or if I got to wake up early and stuff, it's like, once I go under 7, I'm tired, screwed. And sure, you have to measure that, but all of the other stuff, I don't know. I couldn't really pull out too much from it. Like, me and my wife Emma, like, we were both tracking it, and it was like, oh yeah, got to get over an hour and a half of deep. And then they changed the algorithm and it changed. Like, so then I went, and which happens a lot, right? And so, and it was something I wasn't in control of. You're not really going to bed being like, all right, gonna go hard on deep sleep tonight.
That's actually a good point. That it's not,
but you can
that...
like, for some, you know, you can, if you are monitoring it and you want to, my recommendation is to do it for a finite amount of time, not indefinitely. So you're like, I'm gonna figure something out over the next month. So you can turn your phone off at 7 p.m. So, you know, reduce blue light time.
Yeah, dude, that's the thing you have to remember is, like, your sleep hygiene is probably extremely good, right? Most people's is extremely bad. So it might not be right for you right now, but let's say you stored up that data since 10 years ago when who knows what you were doing 10 years ago, dude, right?
Yeah.
You're like, you know, out with the boys, like staying up late, like, I don't even know. Let's not go there. But your sleep hygiene would have been rubbish. And that's highly correlated to probably for you, really terrible diet, overtraining, extremely poor performance, right? And now you're totally different. Sleep hygiene is one of the things that you've changed, which you know that. But you don't have that amount of data to now look back on. But let's say you did. And let's say in 1 year's time, you found that your performance was suffering. You were eating terribly, like you couldn't control your appetite. You were eating chocolate every day. And you're smashing the Cokes in the morning. I don't know why. Do people do that? You know, coffee with sugar. I don't know. You're like, man, like you can't put two and two together because you're so deep into it. You don't know. You're like, oh man, I feel terrible. And then if you had your sleep data.
Like smashing chocolate and drinking Coke in the morning. I'm like, oh, what is happening? I think I can start to piece it together.
But dude, you know how it is. You get so deep into it.
Oh, yeah, when you're
it.
On and you're like, I can't control this. Like, this is my life right now. Especially if you don't even have downtime. You know, we've both been there. Everyone's been there where you're just like, I'm up and I'm like, my day has just punched me in the face. And then until I can finally get to sleep tonight, I'm go. So like, it's Coke for breakfast.
Yeah. Classic Steve move. So if you had all that data, that would be like an incredible asset for you to be able to look back on and be like, you know what? Wow. My sleep hygiene is actually as bad as it was 10 years ago when I was doing who knows what, right? I think it would be a super valuable thing for you to look back on, because then you have a goal that you can strive for to get back to where you are now.
I don't know about like the comparing the rubbish with the rubbish, but having the good data, when you had the good performance, right?
Yeah.
Like, this year, great sleep, amazing. It'd be better to go, you know, when you felt great and you kind of sugarcoat when you felt maybe bad, to just go, I was getting, yes, 7+ hours. And now I'm at, like, I got 7 hours one night, but actually I've averaged 6. So, I mean, I did actually look at my sleep last week because I was sick and I averaged over 9 hours
nice
of sleep and still felt rubbish. So it's like, but I knew I was sick, but it was interesting to be like, oh, wow, I sleep so much. Okay.
Sleep is good. Yeah. But that's just one example of a sensor. And you could say the same exact thing for a power meter. So like, okay, let's say, for example, you're not training, but you have your power data for the last 15 years. Man, amazing. Like then when you get back into training, you know kind of what you can be aiming for, where you were. It adds to your motivation. So even if you're not looking at it every day during the period of time you're not training, you still have that. You can see where you were. You can see how you were performing. And you can use that as fuel for the fire to get back to where you were. Or exceed.
Yes. So benchmarking. Okay. So then... But how? Like, how do we use it? Like, what's the easiest way? Well, we've got, if we go back to the fundamentals, forget about like sleep tracking and body batteries and things like that, and go for your bike, run, swim. Like, what should we be using?
You should have heart rate as a minimum, absolute minimum. Well, you should, as an absolute minimum, you should have the time you spent working out, right? And time you spent moving. That's easy. Strava does that right away. It's links to your training peaks. You got it all. You should have heart rate. You should have power. Should have brake power. Like, yeah, you should just have all of it. I mean, I think as much as you can possibly get, like, it's never going to hold you back.
Okay, but what, like, then you upload and you're like, I have no, like, this, there's so many squiggly lines here. I don't. What should we be looking at?
It depends on what you're wanting to do.
See, this is where it starts to get confusing.
Yeah. I mean, you're just confusing me with these questions. So, like, what?
But these are the questions people are asking. Like, what should I use? Mm. It's like, well, that's a really ambiguous question. But what are people using, Matt?
Most people are using nothing.
Their default. So, in running, they're using time and distance, which equates to speed. And that's the most of it. Then heart rate now is built into every single watch. So that's just there. So whether they are looking at it or not, like, it's there. And what I see as the default is what Strava prioritizes. Average pace. How long it took you to complete a certain distance. And then how long it took you to complete a certain segment. Right. And then you can, depends if you're premium or not, it'll like compare, this is how long it took you to do this loop last week or last time. And this is how you're like tracking, you know, you did this loop faster. So what the majority of people are looking at is distance, time, average pace. Okay. So everyone wants to do a certain amount of time or distance over a week. Monday to Friday. Obviously, that's how our bodies operate. 7 days in a row. Fixed start and end points. So what they're trying to do is just get faster, right? Or have a particular number in mind. And now I was actually just on a podcast yesterday, the Run Smarter podcast with Brody Sharp. And I outlined how what we look at now and what mountain bikers and cyclists, I've seen them, swimmers are doing, is very like lightly associated with physiology. Whereas physiology should be the first marker of how you should dictate your training intensity. But instead it's like, let's go for the outputs and try to like fist them into your like inputs. Like, I want to train threshold, and I know my threshold is like X. So if I go above that, I'm even better. Right.
Yeah.
So like having data is one thing, but having the reference point.
Yeah. You got to remember though, like, who Strava's made for. Like, Strava is made to get people off the couch. Right. If you're listening to this podcast, the basic things that Strava shows you aren't for you. Right. You're already beyond utilizing that. Strava's great at motivating people to push harder. And most people really, really need that. I need it sometimes. Like, yeah, I need to push harder on this segment. But obviously, you run into trouble doing that all the time, like pushing too hard. But, and that's where having all the rest of the information is really key for you.
Yeah. So Strava do that. Like, they have time and zones.
Yeah. Most people don't have that. Most people don't have premium though.
I don't know if time and zones is premium.
I don't really look at Strava, to be honest, like their analytics, because mine links automatically to Training Peaks.
Yeah, but even with Training Peaks, you've got to be premium. It's relatively pricey. Like, you'd probably be better off getting your analytics if you weren't going to pay for anything from your device software. Like, Garmin's really good at the basic level. Like, you can get a lot out of that. You'll get all your time and zones and everything, and they'll adjust your zones, which will be okay. But it'll house all your data, at least.
Yeah.
But I think Strava creates a really basic, good reference point. And for like 60 US dollars, real dollars, like a year. That's
not bad.
That's well worth it. I think it's well worth it. You also get all the other like cool stuff about top tens and age groups and all that stuff. You get all the other premium features, but in terms of the analytics and comparing like past runs to like current runs to past runs on certain segments and loops, it's really valuable. But
dude, everyone can relate to that, right? Everyone can relate to being able to look at past efforts on Strava. Like that is one of the most basic utilized features, I think.
Yeah, because like that's what's not available on pretty much every other platform, like the more in-depth analytical softwares. So for me, like what I'd really like to see as a basic utilizing data in current and past via Strava in running would be running to heart rate. Like, so running in your zone two, because hardly anyone is just doing a flat road or footpath based loop. Pretty much everyone has some kind of undulations. They have some kind of trail incorporation. So by utilizing heart rate, you can clean out all the noise of like different terrain and elevation profiles and all of that. So you can forget the inaccuracies, misrepresentations of GPS. And then you can utilize Strava to see how long did it take me to run this loop in zone two? And over time, it should be trending faster.
Yeah, right. Okay. So like almost like an added feature where it's like pushing you to maybe do some more of the right things. It would have to be. Yeah, that's a cool idea. I mean, it would have to be tailor made to you based on how much you're running, right? Because most people, like I said, Strava's made for them to just get off the couch. So yeah, I could see something like that working.
What do you mean? No, if you just have your aerobic loop.
Yeah.
That's where you go and you do your general aerobic run. Then you can just track it over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a fitness tracking aerobic capacity and heart like tracking feature that you could use really basically. And then what about like fitness overall? I guess where are we now? Where are we in this conversation? Like, and you want everyone to use everything, which is fine, but again, like how? Because otherwise you'll just, like I've seen a lot of people buy a Stride running power meter, clip it on their shoe, never look at it.
Well, that's what you do, right? Is you help people use that data. Now, your efficacy as a coach is exponentially higher when you have all this information to look at for someone, right? So someone's on their journey wanting to get faster and they have all this data. They don't know how to use it. They're kind of getting their head around it. It might be slow because it's obviously not a focus for them to understand what it all means. They're just trying to get out there, trying to get better, doing it on their own. And a lot of people do that for a very long time, years, right? Just kind of trying to figure it out slowly. Like you probably don't have as much time to work out or do this activity as you would like to have, but you're building up all this data. You hit this point where, you know, I see this point all the time. Mountain bikers come to me. There's a popular event coming up. They're like, hey, I want some help. Great. That's what I can do. I'm here to help you understand and utilize this data and make a plan to get the most out of yourself. I can do a way better job if someone has even a small amount of data. If they have none, well, there's a lot of guessing, a lot of questions, and there's a lot of interpretation that I need to make from what the person says to me and what they actually mean, you know? Like, yeah, I just ride easy 3 times a week. Like, well, I'd be great to know because most people don't do that. It'd be great to actually see some cold, hard data. So then I can help them and you can help them. If they have data built up, you can help them way better, way more effectively.
Yeah. Well, how are they going to help themselves?
It depends how motivated you are to utilize that information. There's information everywhere how to use data to help yourself, how to use sensor data, heart rate monitor, power meter. It's everywhere.
Okay. So then what about just not using anything?
Like most people? Yeah, that's fine.
Well, no, if we take the bell curve and we go all the way to the right and we see the people who are like, I slept 30 minutes less than I should have. My HRV is 5 points lower. So now I had 3 by 10 minute today, but I think I'm just going to do an easy something. And then you've met these people, I've met them, and it's like, oh, all right, but now you're busy. That was Wednesday's session, and now you're busy Thursday, Friday, and the weekend's the race, and you haven't, you know, it's like there's some people would be better off not looking at anything. And that's what the study says that we reviewed before the show, was like these cyclists, when they had data available to them, and what was the non-data? Was it just elapsed time?
They were looking at power and pace. I'm not so sure about this study too much.
Gist of it was like they had nothing. They had a 30-minute time trial. They had nothing to look at except for like time. And then they had everything to look at. Heart rate, cadence, power. And when they had nothing to look at, they went better. So that's the gist of it.
I think people have really ran with that idea. People that are like anti-data have really ran with this. And there's a few articles online written referencing this study saying that too much data obviously slows you down.
Yeah. And while I'm not necessarily opposed to that conclusion for a race specifically, because I see, honestly, like 80% of people ignoring their data anyway in a race.
Yeah.
But in training, it makes absolutely no sense
to have the data.
No, to not look at it.
Yeah. Definitely. I could totally agree with you. I couldn't agree more that in races, we shouldn't be keeping a rev limiter on ourselves.
I think we should. We're talking about completely different styles of racing.
What I'm saying is you get to a race and you should be, if this is your goal race, you're at your best fitness. You're there to make a breakthrough, right? So I think, yes, we always talk about this. You got to start smart, 100%. You got to start smart. But you got to race to a certain point. You need to race with your heart, right? Like as hard as you can go. So constantly like looking at the data to hold yourself back, I think you can leave too much in the tank for later on. Like obviously you need to finish strong. You need to have something in the tank for later, but you can't leave too much in the tank. And sometimes you don't find that limit unless you really, really push. And that's, to me, that's what racing's for. And then you have all the data to look at in the end, and you can review that to review your strategy. So I think looking at all your data during a race is a bad thing. But if you don't have it from the race to look at later, what did you actually learn? You don't actually know.
Yeah, I completely disagree for running, especially like half marathon for a fast runner is about the point where I'd kind of allow your strategy. Marathon and up, it is 100% about rate limiting, because no one's getting to the end of a marathon and then a completely different story for an ultra marathon being like, man, I had way too much in the tank over those last 5Ks of my 3.5 hour hard run, you know, because there is zero recovery. It's not like you're going to get on a mountain bike, smash up a climb, and then just not pedal for 5 minutes. Even though you're working pretty hard, there is some capacity of recovery in there. It's like you're running the whole entire time. And if you run slightly too fast, you blow to pieces. And you can't just like sit on your bike and get a freewheel down any of the downs. You still have to keep running. and you kind of exponentially slow down.
Yeah, this is great. You're supporting having the data. That's good. The problem in this study is, well, first off, there's like, they didn't use watts per kilogram in showing their results. So there was like a 60 watt difference between the group that looked at their data and the group that didn't look at their data. So right off the bat,
over an average of like essentially 220 to 280 watts. So that would be what, like 30% increase?
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Because if you have, they had a group of 10 cyclists / triathletes, you have 5 in each group. All you need is one massive dude and one small person in either group, and you're totally throwing the absolute watts off in the stats because you only got 5. I mean, imagine like myself versus someone like our friend Hamish, who is an absolute engine. Like, he's already 50% bigger than me and fitter too, you know? Like, so
yeah,
there goes the results. And like, that's totally going to mislead any interpretation you have of it. Now, and I think also, now when I was reading this, I was remembering back to the study that I participated in for your PhD, where we did the 5-hour time trial.
Yeah.
On the indoor bike, trained for a month. We did different diets, high carb diet versus low carb diet. And these time trials, they were an absolute pain because like, you're not going anywhere. You get a Snickers or whatever at X amount of workload completed. Were we able to know the time when we were doing that?
No. You are only allowed to know. So it wasn't exact time. It was the equivalent of riding for 5 hours at 65% of your VO2 max, the work equivalent. Yep. So it equated to approximately, like for people visualizing it, like 120Ks. But instead it was like, that would say cost you 3,331 kilojoules. I'd let you know every 5% that you were completed. But you didn't have any indication of like how long that took you, and definitely not relative to the previous time trials, of which there were 3 total: the standardized, like the familiarization one, and then as like a baseline measure, I guess, and then there were the 2 intervention.
So I would say having even any data held me back. Right. And, you know, I know how these numbers work. Right. So the only thing that you can see on the bike is your cadence.
Yeah.
And I know power is torque times angular velocity. So I was working that stuff out in my head. Right. This is the power I want to be at. I'm just going to hold it there. Right. So in a way, I do think, you know, if I just had to go like absolutely thrash myself, you know, I could have got it done in, you know, slightly less time. Something, but I'm like, no, I'm gonna sit at this power ish and just get it done, right? So maybe that did hold me back. Having that little bit of data held me back on this time trial a little bit. Who knows what my strategy would have been had I not been able to see whatever that bike shows you on the front and, you know, calculate in my head what the time was. I don't know if everyone did that, probably not, but you know, that was my strategy. So yeah, okay. The data held me back in this time trial. Let's say it. Yeah, I guess that's a thing.
Yeah, but you don't know that though. We didn't.
I don't know that. Right. I don't know that. Sorry, I'm not trying to like totally like thrash your study.
Well, it doesn't matter because you're the same, and then there's a reason I had more than one person complete it.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't matter.
Like, I guess what does it matter? What if you had then been able to look at your data and not look at your data, you can just do that study in itself, right? Between, you know, Emma, my wife, her watch went flat for this half marathon. Outrageous PR. She got her 5K, the fastest 5 kilometers she'd ever run within a half marathon. Like this half marathon where she had no watch, so she just ran to feel. Who knows what would have happened if, you know, she did have her watch. But then, like I've done, last year I did a race and I was in a training. I was leading for a marathon, leading up for a marathon. And this was like one of the final hard hit outs. Hilly, I knew it was going to be slower just because it was a slower course than I would have liked. And I knew I just needed a really hard workout and I wanted to do a race. So I just took everything off. And then I could download the stride data and my heart rate data afterwards, but I didn't have a watch on. And when you are experienced, you know. Like, and this is what I really wanted to try and like tune in terms of like, what's the feeling of how in tune are you with your body? Because this is one of the big arguments, like, oh, you're just looking at your watch to tell you. And it's like, well, because sometimes the data doesn't work, right? We've all had the heart rate issue, especially if you're a runner with the watch. And it's like, I've just got out the door and I'm already at 190. I don't know. And likewise, it's like you're pushing and it says 110. So we've all had that issue. We've all had the watch go flat. We've had the like head unit say you're doing 3 watts and 8 RPMs. So you still need to be in the zone to know what is too fast. But that's a very different mental place. Like there's a very chat, like you need to be really switched on as to like your race strategy is to continuously ask yourself, how do I feel? How do I feel in relative to how much I have left to go on this climb or in this race or in this section? Whereas when you have data, you can just look. Like, yeah. I'm feeling so strong. Whoa, my heart rate is 185 in the first 3 minutes of a 4-hour race. Like, that's too high, right? That's too high. Like, slow down. You can control your system better, right? And then, yeah, retroactively. So I've got this guy I'm meeting with. He's just done a marathon, and he said, I didn't do as well as earlier in the year in March, but I think I overtrained. Right. So now he's got all his historical data and training peaks. And what I'm going to do is check training, total training, like, so training load, training, like distance, workouts per week, like intensity per week, time and zones, all of that. So I can compare that. Then I can compare the efforts themselves, like the actual marathons that he did, and go, well, your first marathon, which was your first, you took so conservatively, like look at this first half, it was dead flat. This one, 300 meters of elevation, which is like, I don't know, 1,000 feet. I don't actually know if that's true, but and then we can do all that comparison, go, this is why most probably you didn't do as well, and this is what we can change for the next one without even meeting him. I can do all of that. And that's where, and it's the same with the LinkedIn people. It's like, yeah, it's overwhelming if you open it up, and potentially it's going to slow you down because you're like, oh my God, I did, you know, 58 more TSS, which is a greater than the 10% weekly increase I'm meant to do. So I need to like slow down. And it's like, oh, I've had this many open rates on my email newsletter. And like, it's like, that's too much. It's too much. Just send your newsletter. Like, just start. You can just start with that, and then later on you can go, oh, look, I had 3 people out of 3,000 open it. That's actually really shit. It's the same thing where you go back and you go, oh, I was actually like, I'd run really hard for 10 days and then I'd have about 2 weeks doing next to nothing. And then I'd be like, that's the valuable point. And that's 100%. Where we need the data. And as you get more educated and experienced, and as these technologies, which there are none out there that I know of, start to become more intuitive as to recommending you like training and feedback recommendations, because all the one, like there's a Garmin one, but it's absolutely rubbish. Then you'll be in a position to actually go, oh, okay, well, this is like, because at the moment you got to do it all yourself. And you,
yeah, bro,
even for us, it's taken, you'd need, I reckon, like 3 years of experience just to be able to eyeball some of the stuff to know, like, well, that's shoddy data. Like there's anomalies in that, or yeah, this looks fine. It's like,
yeah,
that's just too much, right? That's too much for people to do when it's like their hobby.
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't mean collecting it is a bad thing. I think that's the problem, because I know there are a lot of people that get overwhelmed by just looking at numbers, right? They'll open it and be like, oh, too much. I just want to ride, right? I'm like, okay, sweet. That's cool. You want to ride, but you also want to get faster. Here's how we can help, right? So there are all these learning theories. I recently wrote a blog about this on breakace.com. And we touched on these learning theories just a little bit. Like, I'm not an expert in learning, but there's these learning theories.
Hey, we did the level 5 certificate, teaching and adult learning.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I guess we know quite a bit about teaching and learning. Well, yeah, I mean, I've been a teacher for 10 years, right? So, and a coach for longer. So, but, you know, classical learning is kind of this different thing. And what I'm getting at is classical conditioning, operant conditioning, and reinforcement learning, all of them are centered around some sort of a feedback, right? So learning can really only happen with feedback, right? So, okay, let's accept that. Learning can only happen with feedback. Now, what can feedback be? Okay, I just started running, and I go out and I thrash myself, I get shin splints. That's feedback. The feedback is shin splints. Okay, sweet. Let me have a few days off because it hurts. So I need a few days off. I'll get back running when I feel good. Run some more. Ah, shin splints again. Okay, maybe I ran too hard. I learned more. Now I go and I join a running crew. I'm like, I don't want to forget about my mountain biking friends, actually. Let me switch to mountain bikers. So I joined a mountain biking crew, and, you know, they're all training for the local 100K. And you're like, yo, you're going a little bit fast here. Let's slow down. It's a long, long race. Have you tried this gel? Have you tried this drink? Yeah, try that one. That'll really help you. Feedback. You're learning as you go. Then you get your training plan. You do your training for the event, you totally blow up. That's more feedback. And then as you get more into it, you can start to bring in all this extra data. So you have even more feedback to improve exponentially. It really is exponential, the more feedback you get. And the crazy thing is, like, these feedbacks are so new. Like, feedback used to be just like your friends looking at you and telling you what they heard from their friends. And that's it. Just recycling real old, maybe not great information. But now we can get all this information on ourselves. And I was just looking at some World Cup racers breaking. Now, I had a racer, a top racer. This was like 8 or so years ago. We were talking about breaking. He's like, yeah, I'm pretty consistent. You know, this is a top, top racer. Like, we're talking about his breaking. He's pretty consistent with his breaking. He's never measured his breaking. Like, how do you know? Like, you don't actually know. So now I'm looking at a racer who's now surpassed this guy. Looking at his data, pretty consistent for sure, but not 100% consistent. And like, even just looking at it, I can pick out these little things that are going to be just like insane feedback for him to then take it to the next level, the absolute next level. You know, like brake checks, like you dab your brakes real lightly. It kind of indicates that you're not confident with what's coming up. And you could make relations to this with any kind of data with your sport, you know, like running, you slow down too much at the drink station. Okay, well, next time I'll go a little bit faster. But you get this feedback that you're doing a brake check. You're not totally confident with what's coming up. That's really good for you to know. Get rid of that. Get more confident with what's coming up on the track. You ride faster overall. Now, we all know we do it. We all know we slow down into the feed zone a little bit. We don't know how much. We don't know which feed zone. But like, now that we have that information, we have an insane amount of feedback to be able to utilize. It all starts with learning. So our feedback is what we need for learning to take it to the next level.
What do you think is the most valuable piece or pieces of information someone can start with of data?
I would say it depends on what your goal is. If I just pick the mountain bikers, pick on them for a second, like some want to get faster going downhills, some want to get faster going uphills, and they couldn't care less about the other. So yeah, obviously you want to go faster downhill. You need your braking information 100%, but you also would really benefit from knowing your power because you don't know where you're pedaling. So don't forget about that. Bring that into the loop too. Bring your heart rate into the loop. How does your braking strategy affect how quickly you recover on the downhills? Because that's going to affect how you brake later on. Really important. But if you really want to get faster uphill or you're a runner, like fitness is king, you need power, right? You need heart rate. You need all of that over years and years and years, because all of these things that you want to improve take a long time. They don't happen overnight. So you need to know where you're at so you can implement a plan to get where you want to be. That's training. Otherwise, you're just exercising.
I'd say threshold. I think if someone is to start, and for braking or some kind of downhill power, maybe whatever that equates to, but knowing your threshold, that's the biggest improvement I can make immediately in the specificity and effectiveness of people's training. It's just because they don't know, like, what is zone two? I'm just using whatever Garmin's told me. You know, I just use what Strava put up, and it's like 190, 180, 220 minus your age, whatever it is. And it's like, well, yeah, that's not going to work. You run at 190 for like every 5K, you know? Anyway, so doing
that's great for a lot of people.
And then you got your zones, and that's pretty easy then to establish what is hard, what your race should be. So you know, there's like every man, woman, and other is online going, zone two is the bomb. So once you can establish that, you know that. Then you just need to find out what zone your race is in. 10K, half marathon, marathon, ultra marathon, whatever. And you've got that relative to your threshold. There, you can start to train towards that. And I think like there's more, there's obviously so much more behind that in terms of like the structure, the periodization, and the specificity of your workouts to your weaknesses and all that. But just as a starting point, you can go, well, this is easy. This is hard. And if you have just heart rate, we've got an episode on the five reasons you shouldn't rely on heart rate. So there's issues there. Pace, hey, going up a hill, it's going to be slower. So then power is definitely going to be the best option. It's one of the newest, but just starting off, if you have your pace and heart rate thresholds, you can now like look at your time and zones across the week. Oh, I was like 60% zone three. I know zone three is gray zone, and I know I wasn't trying to train zone three. So that's, but once you have that threshold, now you can like, you've got that reference point to go, I've been going too hard. I've been going too easy. This is where my race is, and this is where I should slot into in terms of these intervals. That would be where I'd be going.
Yeah, that's cool. I totally agree there. Like, you need that benchmark for sure.
Yeah. And then within that, you can just keep collecting more. Right. So the reason I wore that heat sensor all last summer was to figure out how it all worked, like in relation to the workouts and efforts I was doing, which created a very eye-opening insight into how heat affected my thresholds. And then, you know, so then you got all that to worry about, but collecting more is not going to be a negative.
Yeah. Never. And, you know, we always see the Norwegians, you always hear about the Norwegian training method, which seems to be getting a lot of clout these days because they're doing great.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because of their training. Maybe it's because they're just, who knows? We're not going to get into it. Right. But, or maybe they're just gifted, absolutely gifted. But we see a lot of what they're doing, and they're collecting a lot of data.
Huge, huge amounts.
And I look at that. And as a scientist, knowing how blood lactate accumulates, I see what they're doing, and it looks so sick what they're doing. Like, they're like stabbing each other in the ears and collecting tiny amounts of blood from their ears to record their lactate. And someone gave this stat where they used maybe 10,000 or so lactate strips throughout the last season with the Norwegians. And I, having made similar mistakes in collecting data for research using lactate, I know, you know, it's just a bit finicky. And once you have it, it's like, okay, cool. But I would say that for most people, it's probably a bit of a waste of time collecting blood lactate because it's expensive. It hurts you. You need to go somewhere special, see someone special, and then also be able to interpret it. And I've seen it interpreted incredibly wrong by people who are charging to give athletes these tests. And that's terrible, firstly. But I think if you have that little bit of information, and maybe you don't know how to use it right away, it's actually really good to be able to look at. And if it, you know, let's say the only benefit of it is that it gives you more confidence that you're doing all the right things. Man, that's great. But, you know, maybe I think for a lot of people, we might hit this certain point where, you know, collecting all the extra physiological data isn't going to help you beyond just understanding your power meter better. But there's a lot out there. Collecting gas analysis, yep, you can get actually a lot out of that. Do you need to collect it every time you exercise? Nah, probably not.
Not sure what to say to that.
Yeah, well, that's just, yeah.
The more intensive, labor-intensive ones, potentially, it comes back to why I think you should clip a stride power meter on your shoe, or you should put a brake sensor on your bike, is that you can collect it without intervention.
Yep.
Right. When you start to, so I've got a lactate meter. How often do I use it? Not very often, because I know when I do use it, I need to use it for probably 4 to 6 weeks in a row. Otherwise, as a single point in time, I don't know, maybe I was like dehydrated, and or I just like had the, I had a couple measurements that were off, or I didn't, you know, was it a high carbohydrate day or a low carbohydrate day? It's like over time I need to interpret that. But then, I mean, when you've got power, you know, when you've got power, you pretty much have the insights that you need to interpret the intensity, because, and once you have the knowledge base around how long your threshold, you know, you've got a 1 hour race and you want to do 4 by 15 minutes. If you do the first three at your perceived threshold, say at FTP, and you're completely boxed and you barely get through 3 minutes of the last one, we know the first three were too hard. Like, we don't need lactate to tell us that. What lactate might have been able to do, where heart rate and power data may have let you down, is that letting you know that the second one gave you an indication that you were going too hard. You may have felt in that like uncomfortable, comfortable zone, but you can see a 6.0 millimole at the end of the second 15 minute. Yeah, all right, I've got to dial back 15, 20 watts. what did we get out of it? Maybe a more effective training session. It was definitely a more expensive one. And in the end, I say to my athletes all the time, it's not what you do some of the time, it's what you do all of the time that matters, because consistency is key in sport. You know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess to sum it up, like, is too much data a bad thing?
No.
Well, is there such thing as too much data?
Yeah. When it starts to, like, this lactate, and when the intrusiveness of it starts to take away from your training.
Mm-hmm.
When it starts to be a burden, right? Like, if you buy one of these VO2 master portable gas analyzers and you've got to calibrate the damn thing every, you know, run, and you got to clip it on, and every session takes forever, it's really labor intensive. And yes, so that's,
I agree.
But anything you can get your hands on that's like a few hundred dollars, because later down the road you think, maybe I'll hit up Matt because I've got an ultra marathon and I know he's good at running.
Come to me for the mountain bike stuff.
But you ever want to hit someone up, they can just look back and it's like a window into your soul.
100%, man. Like, all that data, like, if someone... when someone comes to me and they have endless amounts of data, I feel like the world is their oyster, and they're like clay in my hands, and I'll be able to mold them based on all of these things that are now circulating in my head, and I get it into their Training Peaks, and boom, they're good to go. I think you can't have too much in that regard, but you're right. If it does get in the way and it stops you from having fun, or it holds you back in your performance, which is probably never going to happen in a race, makes you slower, then I think that's when it becomes a problem.
Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks.
Till next time.
Yeah.
I had a really good idea for our next episode, but I can't quite remember what it is. It was last night. You know, when you're like falling asleep, you're like, that's a good idea.
Yeah, heaps of good ideas then. we'll figure it out and get it on.
Ha ha ha.